Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the NBN Entrepreneurship and Leadership Channel. As well as new content, we are making available selected podcasts recorded by our hosts prior to joining the NBN family. This is one of them, and so this podcast may refer to itself with a different name and identity. Enjoy the show.
What's going on here is beyond normal. It's completely extraordinary in a very positive way.
Business brings the world together. It may be quite brutal, it may be quite simple, it may not be very intellectual or refined, but there's something about the entrepreneurship.
There are only two kinds of people, that the ones that are discouraged by failure and the ones that are encouraged by failure. And that what makes the difference.
It's Innovation in Europe by Project Kazimierz. Now another episode with your hosts, Richard Lucas and Samuel Cook.
Hello again, Project Kazimierz listener. My name is Sam Cook, the founder of Project Kazimierz, here with co-founder Richard Lucas. How are you, Richard?
Very well in the north of Italy, in the little village of Gamilero. Good morning, everyone. Oh, good evening, wherever you're listening, whatever time.
And Richard, thank you for providing us all a little bit of jealousy for being in northern Italy right now. So actually, in my historical context of innovation in Europe, that's probably the birthplace for me of the modern era of innovation last 800 years. So must be cool to be there, the birthplace of the Renaissance.
Certainly.
And so, Richard, today we have a very special guest. Every guest is special, but we've been looking forward to this interview for a while with the founder of Brainly.com, which is one of the big success stories in the Polish startup scene here in Krakow and Poland in general. And Richard, I'm going to let you do a little bit more of a detailed introduction of Michał Borowski.
Borkowski. I think I first came across Michał when he was giving a talk at one of our startup community events probably 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was a Hive event. And I remember then thinking, wow, these guys have got a great vision. We don't know each other that well, but Brainly is certainly one of the most visible startups from Poland, and particularly attracting a pretty large investment round of almost $10 million, and having incredible traffic on its websites. They're not all on the Brainly.com domain. The major homework site for Poland, I think, is Zadane.pl. But I think that what's important to underline is the big vision. This is a company from Poland that's definitely up there as one of the leading social learning networks in the world. And B, the fact that they're going for, as far as I know, going for growth rather than monetization, which I always think takes a great deal of guts and very tolerant shareholders. But I think it would probably be better if Michał introduced himself, because as I said, although he's well known, he's successful, he's contributed to community events, and I know people who work for the company, I think he knows so much more about Brainly than I do that perhaps Michał, could you introduce yourself to the Project Kazimierz listeners around the world.
Yes, thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'm Michał, the CEO and co-founder of Brainy, which is the world's largest social learning network. And it works pretty much like a Q&A platform. So students are coming there or get stuck with school assignments. And there is a huge community of students helping each other. We reach more than 40 million monthly users from pretty much all around the world. So our biggest markets are Russia, Indonesia, Poland, Turkey, Brazil, and then we have Latin America and the US market.
Okay, and in terms of the vision, obviously homework, problems with homework is a very sort of, you know, specific pain point in any students, any school pupils' life. Do you want to be like the category killer for that particular problem, or do you have ambitions to move sort of wider in the educational space in terms of where you see the company evolving?
Mm-hmm. I believe that the homework space is awesome because we catch students' attention at the very right moment. So when they get stuck, they need help, they are looking for more education pretty much. But at the end, the Brainy is about democratizing the access to personalized learning globally. So for us, homework is just the beginning. We want to expand to all of the other areas that are focused on providing personalized learning. So we can imagine us, like every student is pretty much different. So they have different needs and we believe that the best way to create the best learning experience is the community that we have at Brainy.
That's very interesting because I mean, I'm as Sam knows because he was involved in the TEDx Kazimierz project, and I've been involved in TEDx movements in different cities in Poland, and went to a couple of TED conferences. Salman Khan, who set up Khan Academy, has this sort of one video plus learning modules, sort of one to many. When you say personalized, is that basically the idea? It's peer to peer, it's one to one, as opposed to one set of content addressing, you know, 10 or 100 or 1,000 or a million users. Is that what you mean by personalized?
When we think about personalization, it's based on two pillars. So the first pillar is the knowledge base that Brainy is creating. Right now, we have around 22 million of answered questions at Brainy that were reviewed by our moderators. So you can imagine machine learning that will be based on what users are looking for, what they are interested in, where they help, where they ask for help. And on the basis of that, you can suggest the right questions for them that can help them to develop their strengths, but also can help them in the areas that they find really difficult. And on the other hand, Brainy is about community. So if you face a problem where you need a help from a person, then you can go ask a question or engage with the community. So when we think about personalization, it's about both of these pillars. So how we can create a knowledge base that is inspiring for students to dig deeper and to look for more interesting topics. But it's also about how they can interact with other members of the community to develop their strong sides.
That's very interesting. So it's, in a way, it's a bit like the sort of help desk methodology, where if you see lots of questions in the same area, it becomes obvious which areas the students are finding challenging, right? You get a sort of...
Yeah.
And how about your relationship with the world of pedagogics and teacher training and teachers? Because obviously one pupil helping another with his homework or her homework might, you know, it's a sensitive area. Some teachers might say, oh, it's cheating or it's somehow not right. And On the other hand, you're doing something which, with the right attitude from teachers, could be incredibly valuable to a teacher. Have you run into objections in different countries to what you're doing, or do you find that over time teachers are coming around to the fact that this is actually what motivated students do when they want to learn, rather than what happens when they don't want to do their homework and they just want to copy someone?
For me, it's very personal, because I really care about the opinion of the teachers from my high school, mm-hmm. and the opinion is extremely positive, and I love that. mm-hmm. And when you look globally, because at scale you should look globally, like, we have around 700 volunteer moderators who take care of the quality of the knowledge base of the questions and answers posted. And a big part of them, these are teachers who help us to improve the learning experience of Brainy. So we see a lot of positive feedback to what we are doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, yes, I was wondering whether the moderators were just motivated students, or they were sometimes teachers. And it sounds to me like it's both, right? It's not one or the other, but both. Sometimes it's highly motivated or motivated students. And talking about the motivation, you know, getting your volunteer community members to contribute to the project, you know, out of commitment to it. What are their motivations to get involved? What is it? Status? Is it feeling useful? Or is there like one thing that's really key for getting people to volunteer their time to help with the project?
So our moderators, they go through the typical user path. So the most common journey is that they go to Brainy to ask a question. Then they find that they can interact with others, answer their questions, they can develop their skills. And then they start interacting with the community, and they keep growing in the rankings that you can see at brainy.com. And sometimes they try to apply for being a moderator. Sometimes we ask them to join the group. But basically they go through this journey from asking questions, helping others, and then they try to participate even more and more and more. So there are some very interesting markets like Turkey, where we have 10,000 of people on our waiting list to become a moderator. So we see that that this combination of helping others, plus the status that they receive at Brainy, plus the access to some functionalities before the whole community receives that, this is very attractive for them.
It's very interesting that for anyone listening who's, you know, maybe thinking of applying for a job later, it's just the sort of thing that as an employer I would notice on someone's CV if they're volunteer or their resume, depending on whether you're American or European. If you put things like you're a Brainly educational moderator or maybe a TEDx volunteer on your CV, that looks very good. I think there's a community of developers called Slashdot, and people put their Slashdot ranking, which is how you're rated by fellow programmers for how helpful you are on their forums. People give their Slashdot score on their CV as a more important criteria than their degree grade at university, because the kind of person it shows you are is probably the sort of person you want to have in your company, right? Because it's someone who's helpful, someone who's thinking about other people.
So this is happening right now. We see users using Brainly as a part of their application process to the universities. So something that we believe in, that at some point will happen, it's like part of the decision-making process for universities to accept you, your application to get there. It could be your Brainly profile, how you answered the questions, how many people you helped. Because in some of the educational systems, the activities outside the school are extremely important, and Brainly is in that space and can help students to build their credibility in front of universities, for example.
Okay, so this is a call to action to our many thousands of listeners around the world. To, you know, if you are in education, consider volunteering. If you've got a family member, a child or a cousin or a nephew or a niece who's thinking about what to do, encourage them to volunteer and get involved in the Brainly community, because I think it makes a lot of sense. Okay, Sam, I've been talking a lot. Would you like to get involved in the conversation? I feel like I'm talking too much here in Italy.
Well, Richard, I think that you've given everyone, you know, I'm just sitting here looking at Brainly's website, admiring the design and layout and the simplicity of it. And
it was released yesterday.
Was it really?
Yeah.
You're kidding me. Well, for me, this is my, unfortunately, my first visit to your site because I'm so busy working on my own. But yeah, that's really interesting. I'd like to dig in a little bit to your pathway to this point, because everyone loves to hear a great success story. But what was it like getting to this point as a co-founder? I know this wasn't easy.
Yeah, so it all started when I was on the second year of my studies. And like before Brainly, I was engaged in a project that was pretty much Quora, but before Quora. And that made me excited a lot about the knowledge sharing, because when you think about how powerful it is that people put into the online knowledge base a piece of content that is pretty much a knowledge, and then like thousands of people can use that, that's just simpler than people talking knowledge to more people and to make sure that everyone has the same access. And on the basis of that thing, but also on my experience at my high school, we figure out it would be awesome to have a platform where you can go ask a question when you get stuck, when you have an exam tomorrow, and receive live help. But what's even more interesting is how you can then leverage on the knowledge that these people are creating to make sure that you can develop deliver a faster value to all the other users of the same community, and that's how Brainly was created. So this was the combination of my high school and my pretty much conclusions on what was happening at the high school and why it was awesome in some areas and why it was pretty bad in other areas, but also on the previous ventures that I was engaged.
So you're a co-founder. What was the story behind you and your founder deciding to actually do this? And did you ever imagine you'd be sitting here with a venture capital backing investment and reaching a global audience?
No, at the beginning, the idea was just simple, based on Polish educational system. So I met Łukasz and Tomek, and that was amazing because we had a discussion for 1 hour about the idea, and then we said, okay, let's do that together. I was pretty much amazed how fast that happened. Before Brainly, Łukasz and Tomek were working together on some other projects, and that's how we met, and we decided that we want to be business partners. But something that I believe is very interesting in our trio is that every one of us had totally different skills. So Tomek was this brilliant engineer. Łukasz was the guy who had who has the talent for sales, for talking about what we are doing. And I was trying to put the knowledge about how we could do the product development, strategy, direction, vision, etc. So I think that at the beginning, the team was very strong because we had not every of the competencies, but all of the crucial competencies that we needed for our start. And I believe this is one of the biggest mistakes when you think about founders, that you try to look for people that are too similar to you. You should try to find people who are different, but in a positive way.
And at what point did you, and you know, this site right now is in English. Was it originally in English or Polish when you were starting in the Polish market?
No, it was in Polish. So Brainy is organized in the way that we have local services.
Mm-hmm.
So in Poland, we have zadania.pl, and in Russia, it's Znania. At some point, when we saw that it's getting global, not only like local or multi-local, we decided to create one brand, and that's Brainy.
And do people from these local brands, do they jump up to Brainly to participate in the English-speaking forums? Or is that something that, you know, especially in Eastern Europe, where you have most people do speak English by virtue of education system and also the small number of people in many of these language groups that need English really to operate in a global market? Do you see that happening?
We see that happening in the group of moderators. So when we launch a new market, they are willing to help because we need the time to build the community when we start the new market. So these guys are amazing and just want simply to help. And that's how you can see their the moving between the local versions. When you think about the whole audience, educational system is based on your national language, so then they tend to stick to the local platform because this is the best place for them. Something that we find interesting is how we can leverage on the language learning at the Brainy. So at some point we want to create this connection between the local versions, and then student in Poland will be able to ask a question in English and receive an answer and help from the student from the United States. And we believe that once all of the local versions will be big enough, that will be an awesome additional network effect in our current product.
Okay, so I'm looking at your website, and this looks a lot like this other website I know called Google, where it's a very clear call to action, which is just a search box. And I have to ask you, who's powering the search on your site? How do you organize your information? You know, Google's mission is to organize the world's information, and your very clear call to action here is question everything, answer everything, and then answer, you know, ask a question about a school subject. What do you use to organize this massive database in multiple languages?
So we partnered with a French startup that is called Algolia. These guys are incredible.
And so they're doing your search?
Like Algolia is a SaaS company. So on the basis of their technology, we built some additional algorithms that help us to get very specific about our product. And this is awesome in Algolia that they let you to do that tweaks to the search algorithm that they provide to make sure that you can adjust the search functionality to what you are doing. But like at the Brainy, search is something different than you think when you compare it to Google, because when we think about search at Brainy, we think about how fast we can deliver the value to our users. So at the beginning, like, it was all about asking question and receiving an answer. And usually you receive an answer at Brainy in 10 minutes, mm-hmm. in less than 10 minutes. But still, it's 10 minutes. It's fast, but what's faster? So it's faster is to search.
So this isn't a Google, like you don't, when you type in the search result or the question, this is actually sent to the user base and then they answer it.
So it's two behaviors. So basically we want to deliver the answer as fast as possible. So the whole flow is organized in the way that if we have that question, you can find it and read through the content. But if it's not there, there is just one click to post that question. So this is kind of mixed functionality of searching and asking a question. Because for us, it's not about searching or asking, it's about getting an answer. And we are all the time trying to decrease the time that you need to find what you are looking for.
And then the other similarity I'm seeing here is you have a community of 10 million? You said 10 million users?
No, it's 40 million users.
40 million users. So you have a cross between Facebook and Google here. And I'm sure you're aware of that. community plus search. You know, Google tried this. It was called Google Plus, and they didn't do so well. So I'm very interested in what your long-term strategy is and when you'll be noticed by some of these bigger internet companies.
We are doing what we are doing and focus on that. So I don't think about that options. If the option is there,
so you haven't,
analyze it.
You haven't been approached yet by any of the bigger companies about your user base or your methodology?
We are approached by the some of the big companies, not the one that you specified, but mm-hmm. We receive acquisition offers quite frequently.
Okay. So, Richard, I'm gonna open it up to you here because I just took the floor for a little while looking into the business model. What strikes you, Richard, about this as an investor? You're a much more experienced investor than I. And what do you see that's attractive to this about international investors? I don't know what your exact funding strategy is throughout the course of this. But Richard, what business questions do you have?
Well, I think the comment I have is that there's clear, not exactly winner takes all, but there's a very strong network effect that the more people involved, the better the quality of the answers, the faster the answers. So I think it's a highly defensible, provided the team at Brainly, and I know a few people who work with in the organization, provided there's high quality community management, high quality support, high quality moderation, keeping up standards, you know, it's going to be hard for someone to come in and be better, because part of the quality is the existing community. Presumably that's an important part of the Brainly story, right? That was a question, Michal.
Sorry, I just switched the sound setting, so he might have. But Richard, you know, Richard's question there, Michal, was about it's really hard, just like after Facebook took off, for anyone to challenge you guys in this because of the network effect and the first to market on it. But what do you see your competitive landscape as? Because your competition can come out of nowhere, just like you guys did. And also potential partnerships and people who are making acquisition offers. How do you see yourselves growing through this?
So, first of all, we look at our competitive advantages. So I think that Richard explained the whole network effect really well. So the bigger the knowledge base gets, more users, bigger knowledge base. And that's how it's growing. You can also add quality to that, so then you have a multiplier of the defensibility of Brainly. When we look at competition, we need to divide competition into two areas. So the first one are social networks. So then you can think about the companies like Snapchat, WhatsApp, Messenger. So it's in a big part Facebook. And when you look at the other space, it's education. Then you can find the companies like Chegg in the US or Socratic. But also you can find a lot of local competition. So when we think about the educational part, we don't have a global competition. I think that we are unique when you look at the educational space. But there is a lot of local competition, and we face that every day. Globally, we think about Facebook, Snapchat as kind of competitors because we compete for time, but they compete for the time that is not educational.
So you're really straddling three markets. It's you have a little bit of a search going on, you have a social network community, and then you have education. And while Facebook, obviously, there's no competing against them as a social network, you're not trying to. You're just trying to have an educational, social learning experience, which you've mastered arguably much more than Facebook can, because their platform is not built this specifically.
Yeah, but like how we think about community is that we try to make learning fun. And when you think about what kind of learning is fun, it's the learning when you sit with a group of your friends and you are trying to develop a solution together, because you have this combination of social interactions and education, and then you are having fun, but you also are doing a great job. So this is pretty much the same as the teamwork at your companies. So we believe in this combination of educational aspect and social that Brainly provides, because then you have the best learning experience.
And presumably also there's a kind of psychological effect that, you know, if someone's sitting down to do their studying, their homework, being on Facebook is pretty distracting, right? And, you know, there's a kind of psychological step that if you're sitting down to get on with your school stuff, you'd probably feel better firing up Brainly or one of your local language sites, because then you're clearly working. Whereas, you know, anyone who's on Facebook, you know, clearly they might be working, but it's very, very easy to get distracted when you're in the Facebook environment, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I know that, because I see I use Facebook for communication about work sometimes, and I know that some younger startups are using Facebook for communicating even with clients. But it's very hard to focus, and it's also hard to what's the word? Let anyone else believe that you're working. If your boss sees you on Facebook or your employee sees you on Facebook, they might think, "What the hell are you doing? You're setting a bad example."
Yeah, Richard. What questions do you have as an investor? And because I'm very interested in the monetization and the eventual exit strategy here. I mean, you know, everyone says I'm going to do this forever, and if you're passionate about it, I really think you should. But at the end of the day, what keeps a business alive is profits and delivering value to shareholders. So, what point are you at in that journey, Michael, and how are your investors feeling about the path overall? And Richard, maybe you'd have a few insights or questions as a experienced investor here.
Yeah, yes, and I think when you're Jakub Pivnik, your PR media relations guy was setting this up, he asked some questions, and it seemed to me that, you know, while you've got the mission of growing and being big, you don't have to, and you've got happy investors or supportive investors, you don't have to worry about monetization. But I was concerned about the, you know, the potential impact on your volunteer spirit in the community once you start at some stage looking at a business model where you're charging people, whether it's, you know, through advertising or content. Or I'm just wondering whether you're ready for that now, or you know when you're going to start looking to make revenue.
So right now our main focus is to scale internationally, with the main focus on the US market. And when we think about what is possible for us to achieve based on the historical data plus our ambitions, it's to bring Brainly to the level of 100 to 500 million monthly users. That is pretty much the size of Twitter. And this is the target that we are focused on, how we can scale to such a large number of users, but also how to increase their engagement. This is the goal. So when you talk to investors, it's kind of like a recruitment process. So you are trying, but they are also trying. So this is a verification on both sides if you are aligned. So when you think about the right investor, is someone who believes in your strategy, someone who can help you to improve it. But basically, you want to go into the same direction. So between us and investors, there is a clear understanding that we need to focus on the global scale and how to bring Brainly to every part of the world and to make sure that we are winning the US market. The monetization right now is not the focus, because that would just simply distract us. And I believe when you look at all of the social networks, it's the same model. There is one winner in the space, and you should be focused on being that winner. You cannot distract for a local maximum of earning some money to show the traction. You should be focused on bringing that to the winning position.
Yeah, and it seems to me that does make sense, that, you know, if you've got the leading social network for people wanting help with their homework, you know, and you're clearly up there with the leader, this is a time when people are really paying attention, and whether it's through, you know, sales of, you know, school textbooks, or whether it's through sales of online courses, or whether it's through, you know, sales of, you know, scholarships to Harvard, if you've got the position where, you know, a significant proportion of the students in the world regard you as the go-to place for their homework, I think as an investor, that's a place that you'd like to be. So, but presumably that's the kind of conversation you can have with an investor. You say, well, when we've got to that, did you say 500 million or 100 million? I didn't hear. Was it 500 million?
Or it was between 300 and 500.
300. When you hit that target, you can say, well, you know, when we're in that position, there will be plenty of monetization options, presumably.
Yes, and I think that with that scale, there are a lot. But something that I believe that the smart companies did, it was how to put the monetization into the model, but without distracting the users. So, like, when we speak to the companies like Facebook or Pinterest, we see that they've managed to build the model that is often improving the experience. Especially Pinterest, it's an incredible company, and like the promoted pins that advertisers pay for, these pins often have like better quality than an average of the pins that Pinterest has. So then when you think about the value, it's a win-win situation or win-win-win, because advertiser is winning, Pinterest is winning as a company, but users are also winning because you just enhance their experience. So we see that this is possible, and there are companies that manage to do that. So we are not extremely worried about that. We look at the space, we analyze the models, we talk to the companies that potentially could be our acquisition targets to make sure that we bring that skill set to our organization. But there is no rush on that. This is not our focus right now.
And that is very interesting, because I think, and you know, as a long-term resident in Poland, who, you know, is very happy to see Polish success stories, despite not being Polish by birth anyway, more by Poland's adopted me or I've adopted Poland, you know, the fact you're benchmarking against global good practice, global best practice, sounds very, very, is very optimistic, because I think the big mistake that some Polish and Krakow or European companies make, they want to be the best in the country or the best in town. But if you're looking at what Pinterest are doing, you know, you're benchmarking against the best in the world, which is the right way to do it. And as an investor, that would make me happy.
Thank you.
And also, you know, as a monetization idea, the idea you could have sponsored educational content, you know, maybe someone like, you know, Stanford or, you know, some of the best schools in the world could be interested in, you know, having some of their scholarship students or whatever contributing, you know, being guest moderators or whatever, where, you know, they establish their brand by being the most helpful or whatever, so they're in a way they're paying to be visible in your community or stuff like that. So there could be quite a lot of lessons there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michal, who are your investors, and how many investment rounds have you been through, and how many more do you need to conquer the world of education?
So the first part of the question, we raised an angel round. I forgot when it was. It was before 2012. In 2012, we raised our seed round. It was $500,000. Mm-hmm. And we raised our Series A in October last year, and that was $9 million. And that's everything that we raised. So, of course, at the beginning, it was bootstrapped. Me, Tomek, and Łukasz, we put some money to make sure that we can start. So that's the fundraising history of Brainly. When you look at the future, like, for sure we need we want to raise the B round, but what's next? It's not defined right now. It's the same like an exit strategy. I've never received that question from investors about like, what is your exit strategy? Because I think this is not the most important thing for us right now to think about. Maybe that this will happen at the level of the Series C or something.
You've never heard the question or answered it, or they've never asked it?
I've never heard that question. I don't know. Maybe they ask that question between each other.
Yeah.
But I see that that they just know that stuff. So if they are able to understand the model, then they can define the exit strategies. Because I think this should be the knowledge that is brought by the investors to the company.
So if someone listening to this in Silicon Valley from one of the big funds, they know that when they talk to you, they shouldn't discuss investment strategy because exit strategy because that will annoy you.
I think this may be different between the market segments. Maybe that question makes sense in e-commerce or in SaaS businesses. In the social space, I've never heard it.
And if someone listening to this thinks, great, you know, there's going to be a B round, how long have they got to get in touch with you? How long does your current funding last? And, you know, at what stage is it by the end of 2016 you'll be needing another round, or have you got longer than that?
Sorry, I cannot comment on that.
The investors probably don't want the answer to that question out there.
Okay, I'll rephrase that. If someone's listening and thinking, great, there is a possibility to get involved, and they, are you looking for, obviously you're looking for not just money, but some kind of value add. Are you looking for more with people with access to tons of traffic, or more people with like educational industry? You know, if you have got a priority for who you'd select, would you like technology or people or know-how or traffic? Because presumably all are interesting, but there may be particular priorities for you.
So when I personally look at investors, it's the combination of a couple of factors. So the first one is the understanding of the strategy and if you want to go into the same direction. Second factor is how they can be helpful in recruitment processes. So John Catalyst Partners, our lead A round investor, they did an amazing job. I don't know if they know that, but when we look at their process of closing the deal with us, that was an inspiration for the whole recruitment process of Brainy. So we've built on top of that our process. They always like challenge us to try to get the best candidates and to focus on hiring a lot. And I think this is an incredible value of the best investors, that they have the network of people who could be interested, but also that they can refer to you the best people in the world in that area. And help you to make sure that the talents join your company, and I think these are the most important. Then also you have the network of their connections, other funds, interesting people like CEO, coaches, and everything that is important to be done in the background to make sure that your company is successful. So when I think about, I would say these are the most important things.
Okay, and if someone with deep pockets who would give you a high valuation is listening, should they just get in touch with you? Is it still worth it, or is the what would be the process if someone did want to try to put some money into the company?
I love to meet, and if someone is listening, then I'm happy to receive an email and then make sure that we connect.
Fly to Krakow and come visit this beautiful city, and stop in on Richard and I too. We'll maybe put a little high 53 together for you, let you speak. Polish love to show up when a foreign investor comes down.
Yeah, be careful, because Sam always wants his 3% introduction fee. No, I'm joking. But also,
I'm making a ton of money off of this right now. So.
You mentioned the CEO coaching, and obviously the company is quite big. Maybe you can tell us how many employees you've got in a moment, but how many team members. But, you know, when running a larger organization is quite a challenge compared to a smaller organization. Which bits of running Brainly do you like the most, and which bits are the biggest challenge? And are you happy doing it for the long haul, or do you see a certain stage where you might, you know, bring in some Harvard MBA or some, you know, more experienced big company guy to help you scale up to a bigger level?
So like, this is the question of my personal development. Yeah,
exactly.
So this is part of the discussion during every of our board meetings when we talk about how Adam Nutrition Power can help in the development. And I meet with a coach that is a very experienced CEO of one of the publicly listed companies in the US. And he helps me to put some framework of thinking, like what are the best practices, how they solve the problems in the past, because investors are awesome, but they have a very specific perspective. So you want someone who is able to help you with work that the person the best understands, because like. He went through it in the past, so he is the best.
So you need to set up a Brainly for entrepreneurs where you can get more publicly listed CEOs who are willing to contribute online.
I think, like, I always, like, my personal thing was always to maintain, like, a limited number of relationships because, like, I'm introvert, so I'm not, like, an awesome person who, like, contributes to a lot of relationships. But that's why I believe that this focus with one person to make sure that you improve and that your company can improve, I think this is a huge benefit. And the introduction to that person was done by Adam from General Catalyst, and I think that this was one of the most important decisions this year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in terms of what you like and don't like about the job, I mean, you don't have to answer this, but I'm quite. It's really a different story to run a larger company than a small startup, and you're way beyond the small startup stage. And I just like which working days make you feel great. It's going to be a great day because I really enjoy doing this. And which bits do you find the most challenging?
I think like. Everything is great.
Wait a minute, you're not Polish anymore. What's going on, Michael?
So, like, for me, there are very challenging days. So when you need to make like hard decisions, but hard that means difficult for me. Like, what is the next step? What should be the direction? When you try to make sure that the team is aligned, this is like a positive. Positive change. It's not like a bad change.
Mm-hmm.
So like there are a lot of difficulties. There is a lot of pressure for sure from the market in general, from investors, from the team, and as the CEO, you need to know how to manage that. This is something that I love, so I'm happy to face that.
I'm delighted to hear that because different people. If you love the challenge, that's also very good news for your investors and your co-founders. And obviously, presumably, Brainly is already quite a valuable company. So on paper, you're wealthy. I guess you may have answered this question already, but do you see yourself like retiring to a desert island at some stage and just living the life of luxury, or would you be happy working as hard as you're working in 10 or 15 or 20 years from now? Because it can just be great built like the CEO of Facebook seems to be very happy doing what he does. He's not retiring, even though he obviously could in a nanosecond. He's so wealthy. But do you see this as your life's mission for the rest of your working life, or how long have you got?
It's a very existential question there.
I like asking big questions.
There you go.
So I really love what Ella Made is doing about the understanding of the balance in your life. So for me, running your startup is about like years. It's not about the next weeks. So you need to try to keep your balance, but it's extremely hard, especially during the fundraising process. It's very challenging. It's hard, and you need to be prepared to that. But keeping the balance is extremely important. But when I think about me personally, You can find the founders of the companies like Mark Zuckerberg, and they are very attached to the initial company, and how they manage the things is that they evolve the company over the time. So they build new ideas but they are focused on that one thing. But then you have the examples of other founders, like the founder of Uber. He created some companies in the past. These were pretty successful exits, like tens of dollars, of millions of dollars. At some point, he created Uber. So he was extremely successful in the past, and every new company was better executed, and he could achieve more. So I think this is a learning process. For me personally, it was always important to make a difference, to improve something. So this is a big thing for me. It's not about the exit. It's all about how big influence the product has on the community of students globally. And if that influence is visible, if we receive the positive feedback from students in the first place, but also from the whole educational environment or not. And this is the thing that that is the most important, like to make sure that it's your passion, and then all of the other things will follow.
Mm-hmm. That's very clear. Well, thank you for that. I'm quite curious. Do you see yourself leveraging the position you're going to have? And suppose you deliver on your strategy in getting up to the 300 to 500 million users as you want. Would you jump into other educational markets, or do you think it's better to just focus on this one core problem of homework? Because clearly there are choices, but what's your gut feel? Do you think it's best to be really good at one thing, or to spread into other areas, like, for example, educational content or teaching or online courses or stuff like that?
So we think about personalized learning that is fun, and everything that is connected to that is in our area of interest. And that's how we define the direction right now, where we want to be in a couple of years. So when we think about education, it's not only homework, it's everything that is connected to personalized learning.
Well, maybe you should keep in touch with Sam then, because the sort of digital, you know, the teaching people about how to monetize education and courses, you know, his other business, the triathlon research, is there's a podcast, there's content, and then there are events, and, you know, certainly I see... down the line, we're going to be interviewing a British comedian who uses podcasts to gather an audience for his comedy shows. And obviously, education about comedy is certainly fun. So I think that it's more than a niche.
Yeah.
We like the word edutainment, education as entertainment. And I think that as people are flooded with more and more choices of how to spend their time, things that are not only interesting but also develop them is such a big and important area in the way the world's evolving. I don't think you're ever gonna. I don't think you can possibly retire, actually.
And I think the sea of education is pretty vast in terms of both scope, revenue opportunities, and more most importantly, problems to be solved. I think education is one of the last industries to have started the great disruption that technology is introducing to the modern world, and it's about time. And I think there's a lot more of it to go. If you look at colleges that have been around for, I mean, Jagiellonian's 650 years, and Harvard, by far the most stable, lucrative business model out there is the university system and education. And I think they need to. Probably be disrupted a little bit, and it'd be interesting to see how they respond to this online movement that has taken so many other industries by storm. And I'm very excited to see what the future holds for you know, education.
Yeah, talking of time, clearly we're coming up to the end of our time. But Michal, could you challenge some of our listeners? Because obviously there may be some people for whom what you're doing is just like obvious. They're going to log into Brainly, create an account, and start helping or asking questions. But for people who aren't particularly connected to this world, what can you challenge them as to why it makes sense for them to get involved? What would be your challenge to a listener who's not necessarily someone who's automatically going to need Brainly today or this week or this month?
Okay, I won't challenge, I will make a promise. So when you put an answer together and you click this answer button, this is one of the best feelings during your day. So you should try it. And see how awesome it is to help others.
Well, I actually created an account while I was waiting for you guys to get together, so I'll do that. I've done Yahoo Answers in the past and occasionally Quora Answers, so I do agree that somehow, you know, being helpful is one of the best deals you can have in life, because at the end of the day you always have to look in the mirror and think, what did I do today? And any act you did during the day that was helpful to anyone is one of the things that makes you go to bed a little bit happier than you otherwise would. So from my point of view, I'd say that's a very, very, not a challenge, but a very strong recommendation. So if any of our listeners decide to do that, please post on our comment thread on our website, or on our Facebook, give us the feedback that you've done that, because then at least, Michal, your shareholders will know that you spent some time contributing to the Brainly calls this morning.
Well, Richard, I think I'll take this one home, and thank you again, Richard, for joining us all the way from Italy. I know that was tough work this morning getting up and going for a swim and enjoying the Italian countryside like you are. Back from Poland, it's still great weather here in August of 2015. So, you know, I think this is a really, I've certainly learned a lot. Just, it's so evident. And that's what I love about great websites, is it's so clear what's going on there. I didn't need to ask Michal for all those observations I made about this, because it's just clear. And I think their goal of disrupting education is amazing. Not disrupting it, but really improving the experience, because they're obviously not trying to put schools out of business, but help teachers get better and students. So, and it's awesome to see this happening, starting in Poland and mastering the different languages quickly, as there are many in Eastern Europe, and then going to the United States. I think it's a great business strategy, and I've certainly learned a lot. And finally, relating to Michal's challenge, the dirty little secret I used to say about teaching was the teacher gets to learn the most. And while it does feel great to help others, you really, at the end of the day, you get so much benefit from, if you can explain something, you truly understand it. And I think that's probably one of the hidden secrets of Brainly, is how smart you get tutoring other people, and, you know, the resume benefits and all the other things we see. So I think it's a brilliant idea. I know that the time I spent teaching for 3 years at the military academy in West Point, United States, was definitely one of the highlights of my professional career, because the opportunity to mentor and give back to people. So if you haven't had the privilege of doing that, Brainly is a very low barrier to entry way to do it, although they're picky and only have great people doing it. I think it's a great way to do it without changing your entire profession of whatever you're doing and going into the teaching world, which I fortunately had the privilege to do, and highly recommend it for your own learning and your own just feeling of civic pride in helping the next generation. So thank you, Michal, for joining us. Richard, thank you. Thank you as always. And finally, thank you, Project Kazimierz listener, for investing more of your precious time in understanding the startup scene in Europe, the hotbed of innovation, which I believe is centered in Krakow and Poland, and is going to provide a major future for Central and all of Europe in terms of the startup community and the future of really European market in terms of their contribution to the age of technology. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for showing your support for innovation in Europe. Tell other innovators about the entrepreneurial movement by leaving a review in iTunes. For detailed show notes and community updates, visit projectkazimierz.com.